long story short, once you accepted God, it wasn't the rapture. These were demons that were invading the earth, but they wanted people gone that believed. So once you accepted Christ as your savior.
So it was like, this is the end, right? Just be nice to people.
In a way, yeah, I guess it was. So basically, if you kept denying your love for the Lord, the world kept getting worse and worse, and you just had to deal with it. But they would only actually kill you once you accepted them into your life.
Being killed was good.
They come to realize that at the end, yes. It was really bad. The one spy kid was in it. The chick.
Oh.
That's the only reason I watched it.
You're going to hell.
She's like 20-some now.
It doesn't matter. That's gross.
What's up? This is Movies on Up, the most devastating detective story of the century. I am Dave, joined by the deep throat to my Wood, Worden Bernstein, Ryan.
I'm going to let that one go. It was what people would expect, I think.
And we are Movies on Up. If you know what movie that tagline is from, the most devastating detective story of the century, let us know, moviesonup@gmail.com, facebook.com/moviesonup, or Twitter @moviesonup, or just put Hocus Pocus on our Facebook page. We did have a winner. I assume Hocus Pocus was a tagline at some point.
It was. It was for our craft episode.
Ugh, we did a craft episode?
Yeah, you were there.
Oh, that's a terrible idea. But we are Movies on Up. This episode, it will be better than
the craft
watching
episode.
The craft
was good.
Was it? Oh, all right.
The episode was good. The movie was not.
This one is another good episode. The quality you've come to expect from us after however many years we've been doing this.
Several.
Whiskey Tango Foxtrot comes out this week, I assume. That's the Tina Fey,
Margot Robbie. Yeah.
Journalistic Middle East story. So we thought.
We know a lot about the plot.
Oh, yeah. And we know a lot about why we do what episodes we do, because I'm just guessing at this point. So we thought, hey, let's do our favorite movies about journalists or about journalism. This list took me a lot of places I didn't really expect.
I can't ever say that I've thought to myself, boy, I wonder what my favorite movie journalists are. There were a couple that came to mind very, very quickly that I like, and they're on there. There's one. We're doing this list, interestingly enough, because of Whiskey Tango Foxtrot, but we really could be doing this list because of Spotlight, which is, if you really want to do a good movie about journalists, you don't have to look very far to get one.
It's
I left
I also
it off.
Ran.
Is it? Yeah, I kind of felt like that was really low hanging fruit. And at this point, we are post the Oscars, though technically they haven't taken place yet.
They were Sunday.
Yes, exactly. As we record,
I wrapped up Film Ball.
Yeah, but we could be talking about a movie that won a ton of Oscars and would be very, very obvious to listeners. So don't hold your breath waiting for us to mention Spotlight, because we're not going to. We wanted to really, really dig into this list.
Yeah, and I had a couple that came to mind right away. Then I dug into it a little bit more and thought, oh yeah, that one makes sense. The list I came up with, I really like all these movies, and I have another probably 7 or 8 also-rans.
Turns out there's a lot of good movies about journalists.
Yeah, so I was going to try to say something like a deadline joke, like, doo 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 doo. Ryan, you're number 5. Breaking news.
My number 5 should not really be breaking news. If you've listened to the podcast for a while, you know, there's a couple series of movies that I very much enjoy. The ones with the laser swords, notwithstanding. Possibly my second favorite movie series is where I get my 5th favorite movie about journalism, and it is from 1997. It's Roger Spottiswoode's Tomorrow Never Dies, starring Pierce Brosnan, Jonathan Pryce, Michelle Yeoh, and Terry Hatcher. Admittedly, this one's a little bit out of left field, and there's a reason that I put it at my number 5, because it's not as good as my other ones. And I was kind of pleased with myself for thinking about this one. It may actually be the worst of the Brosnan Bond movies, and oddly enough, I think it has possibly the most believable Bond villain plot ever. And maybe that's why it's not that great of a Bond movie, because the plot does, on some levels, kind of make some sense. Many of the schemes that the Bond villains have are so impossible that even the most hardened of these suspended disbelievers would have trouble imagining a scenario where somebody's going to irradiate the world's supply of gold or use some kind of satellite to blow up the Earth. But this one, Jonathan Pryce plays a character called Carver, who heads up this global media empire. And basically, he just talks shit to China and Britain to try and get them to go to war so that he can cover it and basically produce content for all the various news outlets that he has. I don't necessarily think that Fox News is trying to start a war or continue a war between America and anyone else, but we're getting to the point our society is probably cynical enough to think that, yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if on some level cable news or even broadcast news places are fabricating stories in the interest of clicks. That's basically the plot in this movie is that turned up to about 1100. It's an interesting plot, and Carver as a villain is a forgettable Bond villain because he doesn't have a scar or he doesn't have an extra nipple. He's basically Rupert Murdoch on steroids, who decides that he wants to start a war for his own gain. And really, as far away from that as we are, we're maybe not as far as you'd think. A lot of folks tend to think, and maybe this is going a little deep into it, that to spur our economy, we sort of started stuff in the Middle East, and that was the government doing it for their own benefit. What would stop a private individual who owns a company from doing it from their own benefit? So, as a plot, I thought it was a feasible plot for a Bond movie, which makes it kind of a shitty Bond movie. But in all the other movies on my list, the journalist is the good guy. They're doing the right things for the most part. In this instance, it's the journalism, bad journalism, is doing bad things.
It reminds me of a movie that almost made my list, but it wasn't so much about a journalist or journalism as it was playing the journalists. It reminds me of Wag the Dog.
Yeah.
In a way, they manufacture a war for the media to jump at. I forget the exact plot to cover up something else. My number five is even more plausible than that because it's not just a realistic Bond story. It's based on a true story. It is 2003's Veronica Guerin, directed by Joel Schumacher, starring Cate Blanchett and Colin Farrell, based on the story of the Irish journalist named Veronica Guerin, who was an investigative reporter and started uncovering some people and bringing some people to the forefront that did not want to be brought to the forefront. Generally, when you start reporting, hey, this guy's a drug dealer, and they are a drug dealer, they don't like it. It's a really good story. Schumacher's career took a weird turn. He used to be one of the bigger directors out there, and then he put nipples on a bat suit, and it seems like everything changed. So this one, I feel like, kind of went under the radar. But it's a solid political thriller, psychological thriller. Cate Blanchett is fantastic, and she just plays this no-fear journalist that, despite warning after warning to stop what she's doing, doesn't until she's gunned down at a stoplight. Spoiler alert. But
spoiler alert.
Yeah.
On someone's life.
Yeah, yeah. It's a solid, intense thriller, and the fact that it's based on a true story makes it a little bit even more interesting.
My number four is about as polar opposite as you can get. It is presented as the story of an actual newsman, but it is not. Much in the way that we could sort of be talking about Spotlight for winning perhaps Best Picture or whatever, we might be talking, I hope we're talking, about Adam McKay winning for Best Director. And my number four movie is an Adam McKay movie. It is Anchorman from 2004, starring Will Ferrell, Christina Applegate, Paul Rudd, David Koechner. It has been my stated position for years on this show, however many years Dave's decided that we've been doing it, that Will Ferrell's a lot like radiation. A little is great and will really, really make you feel better. Too much will probably kill you. This is an exception. I think it's still just as quotable today as it was when it was released over a decade ago. And maybe this is a case of, I think a lot of people like this movie. I think it's funny, but for me, it's certainly a case of right movie, right time. It came out right as I was in about the middle of my broadcasting degree, and it was as close to required viewing as anything that we actually had to watch for class. I can't even tell you how many times after this movie came out that our teleprompter was adjusted. And even on the other side of it, you wanted to play along just because it would be funny and you'd have that kind of crap on tape. I think the characters are tremendous. Ron Burgundy is my favorite Will Ferrell character. I think he's pretty much just Will Ferrell with a mustache, lacking maybe even the little bit of self-awareness I think Will Ferrell has. Ron Burgundy has none of it. And some of my favorite Will Ferrell bits are when he goes on shows as Ron Burgundy. I think it's phenomenal. I was kind of looking forward to the second one, much in the way sequels tend to do. Somewhat disappointed me.
Especially sequels to these kind of movies.
Exactly. It doesn't make me like Anchorman any less. Granted, he's not a real journalist, but certainly Veronica Corningstone thought she was a journalist and tried to be just that. But I do love that this is a lot of journalism movies. You're number five, my number three. You know, they're doing a very serious job for the most part. But sometimes there is certainly a lighter side to it that I think with any job you might think that you're a bit more important than you are. And I like that Anchorman really took that TV news anchor guy, and goodness knows I've known enough of them, and turned it on its head and really made you see those people for the egomaniacs that oftentimes they are.
I've gone on record. I'm not a giant Anchorman fan.
It's probably because you're a communist.
Like most people are. Like, I enjoy it. I think it's funny, but it's not something I can sit there and watch over and over and over again. But I do like Paul Rudd and Brick, like Steve Carell in that movie a lot. That was quite the polar opposite from my number five. My number four is quite the polar opposite of your number four.
You just have a bummer list, don't you?
It gets better. My number four, though, another based on a true story, doesn't really focus on a journalist, but the whole thing is kicked off when a tobacco chemist decides to go on 60 Minutes, where Christopher Plummer is playing Mike Wallace to perfection, in Michael Mann's The Insider from 1999. Maybe this is a stretch. Maybe it's a bit of a reach, because it is more about Russell Crowe, who I feel this is what got Russell Crowe his Oscar. He should have got it for this. He got it the next year for Gladiator. But I feel like this was Russell Crowe's Oscar movie. It's Russell Crowe, it's Al Pacino, Christopher Plummer, Philip Baker Hall, Debbie Mazar, Stephen Tobolowsky, Bruce McGill, Gina Gershon, Rip Torn. It's a Michael Mann cast. It's a very Michael Mann movie. It's a beautiful looking movie, and that's one of the things I love about Michael Mann, is he has this tone to his movies visually that I don't think he gets a ton of credit for. Like, Out of Sight has its own look to it. The Insider has its own look. The scene of Al Pacino, you know, on the beach in front of the waves, yelling on his phone, is such a like an amazing, beautiful shot. But the performances in this movie, and I'm a sucker for any story that's about taking down big tobacco. I just think that's fascinating, because that's a whole dark world that I think a lot of people try to pretend doesn't exist. Again, it was another one that was based on a true story that I just found fascinating.
My number three is also based on a true story, and it's also kind of a bummer. Directed by another really, really good director that has certainly his own style, it's David Fincher's 2007 jam Zodiac, starring Jake Gyllenhaal, Robert Downey Jr., and Mark Ruffalo. I've mentioned this movie a couple times on the show, whether it's true crime or if it's noir. There's a lot of genres that this one could fit into, and certainly if we're creating the genre of journalist movies, this one fits in there. I do agree that it is certainly a bit slow, and it's kind of long, which is not a good combo. The movie's over 2.5 hours long. I do think that it is a very good thriller that puts you right in the middle of, you know, one of the longest standing investigations in American true crime history, still hasn't been solved to this day. Robert Downey Jr. is amazing in this movie. He's flawed. He's a giant alcoholic. His character, Paul Avery, and maybe it was just perfect casting, because that's pretty much Robert Downey Jr. as a human being, so he didn't necessarily have to stretch very far to get into that role for sure. But I think this is right around where I thought to myself, this Jake Gyllenhaal guy is not a bad actor. I will admit that you see a guy that's as pretty as Jake Gyllenhaal, and you think, there's no way this guy can act. Like, he's just getting a job because he's a decent-looking guy. But certainly now, after Nightcrawler and even Southpaw, I thought he was good in that. That movie wasn't great.
Oh, he's in an amazing point in his career. Prisoners, The Enemy.
Yeah.
Like, he's just doing awesome stuff.
Stuff he does now. Yeah, you're not surprised to see him turn in a performance that's amazing. And at least Zodiac was sort of the turning point for me on that, where I was like, all right, this dude is really good. So because I saw him and because I liked him in Zodiac, I'm not surprised to see him having the career he's having now. I do think this movie is, if you'll pardon the pun, criminally underrated, because I think it does a really good job of, if you don't know anything about the Zodiac Killer, in 2.5 hours, you can get a pretty good grip on the events, some of the theories as far as who they thought may have been the killer, maybe who might actually have been the killer. You know, if you don't want to read a giant book or watch 60 Minutes or something, you can check this out, see some really good performances, and get a little bit of an education.
I could be wrong on the timing, but I feel like this and a movie about the Black Dahlia murder.
The Black Dahlia, yeah.
And Hollywoodland, mm-hmm. I feel like they all came out right around the same time.
Yeah, I would say they're probably within 2 years of each other.
And I almost feel like it was like, oh, good, big cast, big time movie about a serial killer. Like, I feel like it's one of those that just kind of...
Well, Hollywoodland wasn't really about a serial killer.
I'm thinking of something else.
That was Ben Affleck shooting himself.
There's something...
The Superman.
Yeah, that's the one I'm thinking of.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But Black Dahlia certainly... I mean, those are very similar stories.
Yeah.
In that they're unsolved, they're, you know... They're murders, serial killer on the loose.
Yeah.
Spoiler alert, they never got caught, so, you know.
But a tease for coming up in April, we will have our favorite Jake Gyllenhaal movies episode that first week of April. So, happy Easter, I guess.
Yeah,
my number three.
Maybe Zodiac will show up on there, too.
My number three, not about a serial killer. It's about a journalist that's sent off to do what journalists do and cover some dirt bike races in the desert. So he does what any journalist would do and takes his lawyer with him and just does drugs the entire time in 1998's Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas, directed by Terry Gilliam, based on the Hunter S. Thompson book. Johnny Depp plays essentially Hunter S. Thompson. Benicio Del Toro, Tobey Maguire's in there, Gary Busey, Ellen Barkin. It's a trip of a movie. It's a trip of a book. Hunter S. Thompson was a trip of a person. This is kind of a perfect amalgamation of all of that. I feel like they tried to capture it later with the Rum Diaries. It was the Anchorman 2 to this movie. I feel like Rum Diaries was very, very forgettable. Whereas Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas, I think it's fantastic. It's fun watching Depp just let loose. If there's anybody you can't accuse of just being cookie cutter doing the same thing every time, it's Johnny Depp. But to see him just completely let go and dive into Hunter S. Thompson like this alongside Benicio Del Toro, it's a blast of a movie. It's just insane. I'm not the biggest Terry Gilliam fan, but the stuff he does that I like, I really, really like. There's no in-between with him. I either love it or I could do without it. And this is one of those that I love.
I love this one a lot, too. In an Earth 2 version of this podcast, it's probably my number one, but we'll just say it's my number two for time's sake. It was the first one that came to mind when you think of journalists in a movie, and I'm not even sure what Hunter S. Thompson did you would necessarily consider journalism. Nonetheless, I do like this movie a lot. I think you're right. Gilliam's style is perfect for this movie. Every Terry Gilliam movie is seemingly what would be going on in the head of someone who was heavily influenced by drugs and or alcohol. So I think that works phenomenal there. I wish I could be the kind of guy that would say, of all the Hunter S. Thompson movies, of which there are several, I would rather have put on the list, Where the Buffalo Roam, because I love Bill Murray. But it just wasn't as good of a movie. And Johnny Depp was amazing as Hunter S. Thompson. He was weird, completely over the edge, but it never came off as overacting. Like, it seemed appropriate for the character. And you're right. I think we have a couple different versions of Johnny Depp. You know, we have the Johnny Depp who's playing a character, and then we have the Tim Burton Johnny Depp. They're two separate areas of his career. And I love the Johnny Depp that's just playing and completely diving in to this character and not trying to just be weird for weird's sake, I guess.
Yeah, he pulls it off. Like I said, I don't know if anybody dives into anything as much as Johnny Depp does every single role. So this was your number two? Is that what just happened?
Yes.
Okay, so
two.
It's like me again.
It's you again, Dave.
My number two did have a number two, but the first one is on the list. It is a lovely story about an investigative reporter for a newspaper back when those were a thing still. It is from 1985, directed by Michael Ritchie. It is Fletch, starring Chevy Chase. I love this movie. I love the Fletch character that's just this goofball journalist who gets in over his head. Having him be an investigative journalist to go undercover is just a really cop-out excuse to get Chevy Chase in just really funny scenarios. And it works. I like Fletch. I actually like Fletch Lives. I like the sequel. I like this Chevy Chase, though. Chevy Chase in the 80s, I think, is...
This was the perfect application for Chevy
Chase. Oh, absolutely.
Like, The Jerk was the perfect application
that
for
was Steve Martin.
Martin.
Yeah. Uncle Buck was John Candy. Like, this is the Chevy Chase movie. And, I mean, there's a lot of them to choose from. Like, in the 80s, Chevy Chase had a good run.
Certainly.
I mean,
the vacation movies were good.
Yeah. I mean, he was a leading man. Like, he was leading movies and doing them regularly. And this was...
Caddyshack?
As much as the vacation movies were his movie, this was a Chevy Chase movie. Like, this was the Chevy Chase movie. This put him in situations to just be Chevy Chase and be funny. And it delivers. And you know what? I've never been against a Fletch remake. It's gone on forever. Like, there was Zach Braff. There's Jason Lee. I think Sudeikis is one of the most recent ones. Or Ed Helms. Anybody.
One of those guys.
Yeah, like, I just think it's such a good character. And it's an easy enough premise that you can take somebody funny and put them in that. Like, I think Sudeikis would be fantastic. I really do think Sudeikis would be a really good Fletch.
Will Forte.
I was just going to say Will Forte or Bill Hader. Like, any of those guys. Like, it's a good vehicle for somebody who's really funny. It's not Anchorman. Like, you're putting them in a position to play Ron Burgundy-type characters without writing a movie around Ron Burgundy. So I guess maybe I love the idea of Fletch, but I love the Fletch movies. I'll go ahead and say Fletch and Fletch Lives are a tie for my number two.
Code number two. My number one is a movie that certainly would have made the list somewhere. It occupies the number one slot mostly because I didn't want to put another movie on here that's very similar to it. It's James Brooks' 1987 Broadcast News, starring William Hurt, Albert Brooks, and Holly Hunter. Network is the movie. I would call it an also-ran, but it's not an also-ran. It's
I left
tremendous.
Network and Broadcast News off my list because I assumed they would be on yours. At least one of them.
And I couldn't do them both. I've talked enough about Network that if I put it on another list, somebody somewhere would stand up and they'd be mad as hell. I put Broadcast News on because I like the different aspects of journalism and specifically what is journalism. You have two characters in the movie, William Hurt and Albert Brooks. William Hurt's kind of like good-looking dude, and he's sort of like the TMZ kind of reporter. It's soft news, and Albert Brooks is an Albert Brooksian-looking fella who's really doing, you know, the grunt work, the dirty work, the actual, I'm here to be a journalist and to make a difference and to give good news. And then you have Holly Hunter's character, who's the producer, and she's kind of stuck in the middle trying to choose between which guy to lead her newscast and which guy to ultimately fall in love with. So she's basically making the same choice twice. It's a bit heavy-handed in the allegory here, choosing between style and substance, but I still think it's a really, really good movie. And again, it's probably me being a broadcasting major, this was another one that you kind of had to see. And I think it's a really, really good movie. It's sort of funny in ways you wouldn't necessarily expect it to be. But I think, especially now, maybe even now more than ever, when we have shows, you know, like The Dish and TMZ and all that kind of stuff that are news adjacent, this is just kind of like they were waving the red flag that this was coming 30 years ago.
Yeah, this and Network, I think, are the two ultimate journalism movies, especially for TV journalism. And they were both so far ahead of their time because these are before 24-hour news cycles. And Network specifically just hit so many things on the head. And it's almost scary to watch now and realize that, oh, this movie is 40 years old.
Certainly, either of them, specifically Network. I mean, if you have 2 hours and you're all interested and haven't seen either of them, watch Network and look at that through 2016 glasses, and yeah, you'll see exactly what Dave was saying.
Network is definitely the better of the two movies, but both immediately came to mind when we were doing this list. But my number one is neither of those, because I figured you would have them. It is one you mentioned earlier. It is from 2014, written and directed by Dan Gilroy, starring the lovable Jake Gyllenhaal, who Ryan professes love for. It is Nightcrawler. Probably the coolest movie of 2014. Gyllenhaal is just a dude looking for a job, desperate for work, and realizes there's money in filming car accidents and crime scenes. And there's even more money in being first and getting the perfect shot at these crime scenes. So it's a fantastic movie. I love how dark it is and how hilariously unfunny it is. Like, it's funny, but it shouldn't be.
His interactions with the rest of the world are funny because he clearly has... the reason he doesn't have a job is just because he's completely detached from the world.
Like,
such a weird character.
It's fascinating because there's no arc. Gyllenhaal's an asshole at the beginning of the movie and a bigger asshole at the end of the movie.
That's like, the arc.
Yeah, that's the arc. There's no redeeming qualities about his character. And that's not really spoiling it because you still probably don't see what's coming. There's no redemption. There's no sees the error in his ways. No, it's just he's an asshole. And this is a movie about him being an asshole and being rewarded for it handsomely, pretty much.
Because on the one hand, he's an asshole, but he was very good at his job.
Oh, he was amazing at it.
Yeah, well.
Scary.
Yeah. Scarily good at his job. But there again, it's what is news and what really...
It leads.
Exactly. What do people, and by people, I mean us people, people that watch news, what do you want to see? There's a reason that newscasts lead with things like that. It's because it's a ratings thing. That's what we want to see, so that's what gets put on the air. And for it to be such a business decision, you know, on their end, Gyllenhaal, his character, just finds a way to exploit that business for his own gain. And God, he is such... We talked about Johnny Depp really taking these characters. And Gyllenhaal, I think, does much the same way. Like, he was...
Under the radar flamboyant movies way. Yeah.
Yeah. Because, yeah. I mean, this character is every bit as weird as, you know, anything that Johnny Depp does. It's just, the movie flew a little bit, certainly more under the radar than either of us wish it would have, because I think it was really, really good.
I think it might hit too close to home, though. Like, I feel like it's almost too on the nose, like, because you see TMZ and you see the Ray Rice video come out and you see that
we should feel bad for clicking on this stuff and for watching it?
Yeah, and you see things about paparazzi, and I don't feel like Gyllenhaal is that over the top.
No, he's not that far from... You like, know, there are people out there today that are Jake Gyllenhaal.
Yes, you think of Princess Diana and like dozens of scenarios where they bait you into hitting them, and that's their paycheck.
Right.
It's scary. It's not a horror movie, but it's terrifying. And it's not funny, but it's hilarious. It's one of those movies that it's hard to... What is it? Is it a drama? Is it a comedy?
Thriller.
Like, it's a really hard movie to categorize because...
It keeps you off balance the entire time.
Yes, and it's fantastic. And if you have not seen Nightcrawler, definitely check it out. Did you have many also-rans on yours?
I didn't have many. Spotlight, I already mentioned. Network. Full Metal Jacket, just because I like to put Kubrick movies on lists when applicable. And then Almost Famous is one that absolutely probably should
Almost
be on
Famous
there.
Was... I had it at my number five, but I thought you might sneak that on there.
I would like to... No, go ahead. Go ahead. I'll get to it. You're going to be super impressed with my podcasting skills right now.
Almost Famous was like the last one to get cut from my top five. Spotlight, obviously. All the President's Men. That's one of those, I think, up there with Network and Broadcast News. Shattered Glass, starring Anakin Skywalker.
Yeah.
In where it's like you watch that and it's like, oh, this dude can almost act. And then you see the rest of his career and you go,
no,
what the hell happened? But Shattered Glass is a pretty inner... I think because he's just a whiny ass in that movie. And
that's right in his wheelhouse.
Yeah. True Story with Jonah Hill and James Franco from last year. I thought that movie was really good. I thought Hill and Franco were fantastic. It went way under the radar, and just kind of came and went. Really, really good, though. This one's an odd one. I put State of Play as an also-ran. The American movie was not that good, but it's worth mentioning just for the British miniseries that it was based off of. Fantastic story. The miniseries does a much better job getting deep into the story. The American version has some highlights. I think Bateman is a highlight. But State of Play is actually pretty solid. It's a solid American movie. It's a fantastic British miniseries.
In a couple weeks, we're going to do an episode on one of our favorite movies, Spectacular Now. I mean, it's really good. Perhaps it's from one of our favorite directors, James Ponsoldt. He's got one a bit like Almost Famous, End of the Tour, with Jesse Eisenberg.
Jason Segel.
Yeah, Jason Segel. And Veda from My Girl. Welcome back, Anna Chomsky. I tend to love Ponsoldt movies, and that's going to become apparent when we do the Spectacular Now episode in a couple weeks. But that's another one that I have high expectations for, because I think so much of him as a director that I think it'll be really cool. It's about the Rolling Stone reporter who interviews David Foster Wallace.
I think that one got a limited release last year and was kind of hard to find.
I think you're right.
It seemed polarizing. It seemed like people either loved it or hated it. I like Ponsoldt's work enough, though, that I definitely want to check it out. Thank you for checking out this episode. This is one of those I know we missed something. I know there's action movies starring journalists that I completely whiffed over. I can't think of any right now. So I know we missed some, even though we gave quite a few also-rans. If we missed your favorite movie about a journalist or journalism, hit us up, moviesonup@gmail.com, facebook.com/moviesonup, or Twitter @moviesonup, and let us know. We'd love to hear yours. It was a lot funner of a list to do than I anticipated. We will be back next week with next week's episode.
It's our favorite John Goodman movies.
Is that next week?
That is next week.
Next week will be a good one, man, as we do our favorite Goodman episodes.
Mark it at 10, fellas.
Yeah, but until then,
keep it up.